Bagheri, and good morning from ORC and the group that I'm sure is about your strategic plan for 2008-2009. I'm sure we've met for some time now. You'll quickly take us through. Once you finish, then we'll engage you. And, over to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say, I'm with my colleagues here. Ms. Komoto Kota, this is just stepped out. She is one of the deputy directors in the Office on the Rights of the Child. We also have with us here the director of the National Children's Rights Committee. The National Children's Rights Committee is an NGO that ORC is partnering with in terms of children's rights mainstreaming in civil society. I have previously reported to the portfolio committee here, Chair, that we have partnered with NCRC for that, and we requested Mr. Zoku to also join us here because we are going to be doing quite a lot of work with them this year to say a bit about what they would be doing in civil society in relation to our partnership.
If I may disturb you.
Yes, Chair.
Since you have got this members or partners, I think then it will be proper. Because we took it that we're meeting every now and then, that members would introduce themselves so that then they would vote on us.
Thank you.
I am at that, yeah, and I am Kimsan Kamed, I'm co-chairperson of this committee, and I'll ask the members to introduce themselves.
Judith Chalmers, I'm a member of this committee from the
Maxwell Moss, a member of the committee. I'm from Saldanha Bay, the West Coast.
I'm Ted Libenya, a member of the committee. I'm from KZN.
The Lodi Tebe is my name. I'm from the Free State.
Thanks. It's over to you now.
Thank you, Chair. Indeed, we were requested to come and talk to the portfolio committee about our strategy plan, and this is what we will be focusing on, strategy plan and budget, and this is what we will be focusing on. Our presentation, our strategy plan starts with an organogram for ORC, just to remind us how ORC is structured. We then will quickly look at the broad vision and mission of the ORC, our national children's rights priorities. We will look at the ORC mandate and core functions, which are part of our strategy plan, our vision and mission, our strategic objectives. We will also look at operating values and principles, performance overview, and over the past few years in terms of the strategy. And we will also look at our resource plan, which is where we'll be addressing the issue of budget. We also thought it would be good to share with the portfolio committee our year-end report. It will do it very briefly. And we also have additional reports just for information for members of the portfolio committee. In terms of our organogram, Chair, ORC, as we know, has a director, three deputy directors, focusing on children's rights mainstreaming, capacity building for mainstreaming of children's rights. We also have a deputy director focusing on monitoring and evaluation. We have a senior administration clerk and a senior administration officer. Periodic technical support. This is where we periodically would request different people to come and support us, either through contact work or just consultancy work, but we use that very sparingly. We also have a senior secretary in the office. So this is the full staff complement of ORC, and everybody is in their position as we speak. Our broad mission and vision in ORC is to provide leadership in the children's rights sector towards the building of a united, non-racial, non-sexist, democratic, and prosperous society. This is based on the broad mission and vision of government. So this is what we do in this particular sector. We achieve this on mainstreaming of best interests of the child standards in governance processes, strengthening of child protection and development, cooperating at the three spheres of government. For us, it is very important that the three spheres, provinces, national and municipalities, including departments, that we work together to ensure child protection and development in the country. We also are committed within the sector to advancement of children's rights, public-private partnerships, and our partnership with the NCRC is one such a partnership. But as you know, most of our departments also partner with different NGOs. We also are committed in the ORC to mainstreaming of indigenous best practice in processes of the National Children's Rights Program. For instance, just as an example, the best practice of putting children who have lost parents in extended family systems, for us is a very important best practice, and we are talking to social development to make certain that we use that indigenous best practice to protect children who have lost their parents. We also are committed to accounting on children's rights performance in South Africa to the nation, and as we report to the portfolio committee here, this is part of us accounting to the South African nation. We also must report on behalf of government around children's rights to the AU and to the UN. Our national children's rights priorities in our strategic plan are based on the national priorities that we have as a country, and in line with this, in the children's rights sector, our priorities are to develop, to promote, and facilitate implementation of the child poverty reduction strategy. The document that we have shared with you, Chair, has detail around everything that I'm saying. And in the document, we show both the national priority and then we show the related national children's rights priority. In terms of our second priority as a sector, our priority is to monitor, report, and facilitate continuous improvement on quality education. Quality education is important for us in the country because we say if we do not do that, then as a country, we do not help the country in line with the national priority strategy to provide skills that are required by the economy. So in the children's sector, to be able to assist in that area, our responsibility is to ensure a quality education. We also, another priority is to institutionalize child and parent input in key national, continental, and international processes. This is in line with the national priority to consolidate democracy and to build a responsive and caring society. Our fourth priority our fourth priority is to strengthen child protection measures in society. We are very concerned as ORC that our children at this point in time, there is so much violence against children at this point in time in the country. And it is our responsibility, therefore, to try and understand why this is so and to try and facilitate that children are better protected in our country. Fifthly, we seek to ensure efficient administration of primary health care and services to children. That is in line with our national priority that says we will provide we are striving for a better national health profile. And lastly, we promote support and initiate children's rights initiatives for the benefit of children in the world. This is in line with our national objective that says we want to be progressive in our role as a nation, as South Africa, in Africa and in the world. The ORC mandate and core functions, in fact, primarily mandate, is that the ORC is to provide high-quality professional support to the President, the Deputy President, and Minister in the execution of their executive responsibilities to South Africa's children. Within this context, therefore, we are able to work very closely with the departments, with the provinces, with municipalities, and with civil society, because for President, Deputy President, and Minister to do their work around children in this country, necessarily we would have to liaise with all those different sectors in our society. Our vision is to ensure that is to work towards our mission in the ORC is the development, leadership, and management of the National Children's Rights Program. So that's what constitutes our mandate and our vision and mission. The core functions of ORC are in the document in detail, Chairperson. I think on pages on pages 10 of the document that we have shared, and just briefly to say our core functions, which are the functions on which our budget is given to us, are primarily mainstreaming of children's rights in governance processes, mainstreaming capacity building in government, and finally monitoring, evaluation, and reporting on children's rights delivery in the country. The strategic objectives of ORC are to strengthen strategic children's rights leadership and management capabilities at all spheres of government to achieve cohesion in the sector. And this is why we work so closely, as I indicated earlier on, with departments, with provinces, and with municipalities. We conduct a number of children's rights training programs for all the different spheres of government, and I will be reporting on that later on. Our second strategic objective is also improvement of management, access and sharing of children's rights-related information in the sector. We also facilitate, coordinate, monitor, evaluate, communicate, and report on the performance of children's rights legislation, policies, and programs in our country. Our report, as I indicated earlier on, our report can go to both the Portfolio Committee, the AU, and the UN, United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child. We also have a responsibility in terms of our objectives to ensure that we foster citizenship principles among our children, because as we have observed in many instances, we see our children in some instances struggling with national identity, and as a sector, as the Office on the Rights of the Child, our responsibility is to do work with children to make certain that they do understand who they are and their national identity is strengthened. Because we believe any person, any child who does not know who they are, find it very easy then to be swayed in terms of practices that are happening globally. And also our responsibility within the Office on the Rights of the Child in terms of our strategic objective is to facilitate integrated policy implementation to accelerate children's rights delivery in the country. Just as an example, early childhood development, for instance, which involves not only education, but also involves social development, involves home affairs, and a number of other departments, our responsibility is to make certain that the departments work together in terms of delivery on early childhood development in our country, and similar other programs that need to be delivered with coordinated work and collaboration by different departments at any given time. The other strategic objective of the ORC is to facilitate, support, and consolidate children's rights initiatives towards a better Africa and a better world. And finally, we have to ensure that opportunities that derive from economic growth and second economy initiatives strengthen child protection and development in South Africa. So, Chair, when you look at all our strategic objectives, they are in line with the strategic objectives of the president in the presidency, but we then have to take those and adapt them for the sector and then be able to do the work that we are doing in the sector as ORC. The values and principles that drive the work of the ORC are underpinned by Batopili principles, namely that we seek to be responsible in doing the work that we do, to be committed to service delivery, and to ensure equality in terms of service delivery, to be courteous to our people as we do the work that we do, not only people but also to the children as we do the work that we do, and to be loyal to the issues of development and transformation, to empower those who need empowerment, especially in our case it would be children, especially in rural areas, children in poor communities, children in informal settlements, and children who are refugee children, for instance. And when we talk about refugee children, the issue of Alexandra comes to mind. For instance, we were very worried about what was happening in Alexandra, and what we then did as the ORC was to go and understand what went wrong in Alexandra. And when we got there, we found that people who had been displaced in the township were all accommodated in the police station. We found that the Department of Social Development and many other departments, health and them, were already on the scene in, at the police station. We joined the meeting and started talking around how to assist and resolve the problem. One of the issues that we raised as the ORC was the issue of children, to say, what about children? We should not be leaving children in this traumatic situation. Shouldn't we be considering to maybe remove the children to a safe place of some sort whilst we are struggling with resolving the issues? And fortunately, we were able to get a institution that is considering it. The province is working around resolving the issues there. So we got involved because that for us was very important to identify and socialize within that context. Our work also is underpinned by our standards in the work that we do. We do in our capacity. So self participation is also very important in our area of work. And also upholding the of the sector for us is very important. So those are the principles that underpin the work that we do. We thought here it would be also good to share with you the ORC's five-year performance overview since 2004 to 2009. Our strategy plan, we are in the, this year is the fifth year of our strategy plan. This is the strategy that we outlined for ourselves in 2004 and for 5 years, and this is the fifth year. This year we will be going to a strategic planning meeting again to then plan for the next 5 years in terms of what we will do. But in terms of what we had planned when we started out in 2004, we thought that our objective at that point would be to ensure that in over a period of 5 years, we are able to establish cohesion in the sector by developing and institutionalizing systems for children's education, coordination, oversight, and reporting. Now, in line with that measurable objective, or strategic objective, it should have been, in 2004-05, our performance milestone was efficiency and effectiveness audit of the National Children's Rights Program. When we started in 2004, we realized that since we had been working in this sector since 1994, we had not stopped to reflect and to find out for ourselves whether our systems are working or not. So in 2004, we did that exercise, and at the end of that year, we had an audit report that told us what our strengths are, our weaknesses are, and improvement opportunities could be. So in the following year, then we used that report to then restructure the National Children's Rights Framework and to also consult in all provinces, consult with civil society and government structures to say, we believe that based on those findings, this is how we need a children's rights framework for the country should look like. Everybody made input, and we were able then to finalize that framework and have it adopted by the sector and also approved in the presidency. So 2005-06 saw us doing a whole lot of work around that. And what we had also been able to do in that exercise was to make sure that we align the National Children's Rights Framework with the constitutional mandate, our strategic agenda of government, and also government processes and systems. we had observed in the initial children's rights framework that the national children's rights framework was more aligned to international norms and standards, not to our constitutional mandate. So when we restructured and revised this thing, we had the opportunity then to align it with the national system. So 05, 06, so was doing all that kind of work. In 06, 07, what was key for us as an outcome was the fact that we had institutionalized children's rights, facilitating, coordination, oversight, and reporting systems and processes. And this means that we knew how to facilitate work, a children's rights work at national level, but also that those systems had been cascaded down to provinces and had been cascaded down to municipalities. We have recently, not so long ago, also made certain that those same systems also are aligned with what civil society is doing in the children's rights sector. So 06, 07, so I'm doing quite a lot of work around that area. In 07, which is last year, 08, we were, because over the years we have been doing quite a lot of work around capacity building. We had achieved 06, 07, children's rights competencies at the 3 years of government, even though we must indicate that at municipality level, there's still a lot of work to be done. But we have started, and we are feeling quite confident that in the next 2 years or so, we should have done very well also at municipality level. This year, 08-09, which is our 5th year, we are seeking to ensure that there is alignment at the 6 years of government ultimately on the understanding, interpretation, and implementation of the National Children's Rights Facilitation Coordination and Oversight Program. Now, all this work then is in our case means that we have to do quite a lot of work in civil society, quite a lot of work at municipality level to make certain that we, in the sector, we speak the same way when we talk about children's rights. I must also indicate that these are just the common milestones over the 5 years. But this does not mean we have not been continuing within that context to do mainstreaming of children's rights in government processes. We continue to do monitoring and evaluation, and this is how then we were able to come and report both to the UNCJ and to other structures that we needed to report on in terms of children's rights. Our resource plan in terms of our strategy over the years has been as follows. In 2005-06, we were allocated in the presidency 3.5 million, 06-07, 3.7 million, 07-08, 3.8 million. Our budget this year that we have submitted, and we will indicate how we came to that, amounted to 5.3 million. This amount has not been approved yet. We, in the presidency, were told that we were going to get about 2.5 million for this year. So we then appealed against that to say we would not be able to achieve in terms of our operational plan for this year. So consultations are still in progress in terms of this amount of money that we requested. And next year we'll come up with it. This is only different budget on the year. So in terms of our strategy plan, this is what has been driving the work that we do in the ORC over the past 4 years. We also thought it would help Chairperson if we shared with the members of parliament here, honourable members of parliament, our performance milestones in the past year, 07-08. And these are the following then. The sequence in here is different, sorry. It's the next document.
you know, some of these are written annual and high performance.
Out by ORC and the Department of Correctional Services, where we are going into prison, into correctional services, to interview people who have been sentenced for killing children, to try and understand what drove them to do what they did. And we are hoping the information that will come out of that exercise would then be able to enable us to do preventative programming and then interventions the way we ought to as a country. I think all in all we have... Okay, we have a number of people who have been sentenced in all prisons in all provinces, and our interviews are happening in as we speak in those areas. As I said, Correctional Services is working with us. And we produced the AU Midterm Country Report on the Africa Plan of Action for Children, and this report was deposited with the AU in November last year. ORC also led the delegation that went to Cairo to discuss this with other AU member states, those countries' reports, because in that meeting the reports were then meant to be consolidated into the Africa report that was then taken by the AU and presented to the UN General Assembly. We have also finalized the draft MNE framework for the sector, and this MNE framework is currently, again, like the national policy, is currently in the different provinces, the departments and municipalities for discussion. At the same meeting where we will be finalizing the national policy for children's rights, we will also be finalizing the sectoral MNE framework. And ORC also led a delegation last year to the Netherlands, where there was an international meeting that was going to finalize an international convention and protocol on the recovery of maintenance. This has to do with where parents of children decide to leave their children in a country and go and work in another country. And this exercise meant to ensure that if a father leaves, we are able to claim money for maintenance of children from wherever they are in the world. So that was a very important convention for children in South Africa whose parents are working in different parts of the world. We also, as the ORC, were able to facilitate the Day of the African Child Program, the National Children's Day Program, and the Annual Children's Day Fun Day, Children's Fun Day, which Fun Day was the first time ORC got involved with, because we feel very much that particular program promotes childhood, children must play. So we were quite happy that it is primarily driven by the Deputy President, but we have since agreed with her to work with her on that, because we saw it as an opportunity to promote childhood in the country. In terms of our operational plan, Chairperson, may I take us back to our document, page 30 in our document. The first document, page 30.
I might have to detect it. I just want to check with honorable member whether it would be proper that we started the operational plan, whether you're ready to go for 14 or 15 minutes. You agree to that we want to interrogate this first lot. Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, since we all know that we're going to suspend this presentation after we get an indication, but then can we start and have some questions and comments on what has been presented? So is that all?
activities in this country, but I'd also like to know if you are monitoring what's happening to child sex, and in particular what has been happening in the Eastern Cape around the Sterkspruit area, and whether the office in the Eastern Cape has been monitoring what's happening there. There was a delegation that went from Parliament, from Home Affairs and Water Affairs too, and I have seen that report, but I know that there are further reports coming out, but I just wondered whether the ORC Office in the Eastern Cape is also monitoring that and keeping tabs on what is happening there, because it's a really tragic situation. That's the one question. Then I'd also like to know whether the midterm country reports that you reported have been deposited with the AU, and that will and then the Department of Health visiting South Africa in the CARA conference meeting that consolidates the Africa Work for Children report to the United Nations. Is that the same as what is the status of our report to the United Nations, or does that all become part of a general report? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out from the presenter that what is it that the Office of the Status of the Rights of the Office of the Rights of the Child is going to do or plans to do in ensuring that they've got programs that actually touch children from the local areas. Because my concern is that up to now, I've not heard anything happening at a local government level. I heard you in the report saying that there is something that is being done, but I want to check that once those offices have been established, are you going to provide them with a program that they will work on in order to ensure that this is properly implemented? And secondly, the issue of the child-headed families, is there anything that you are doing with regard to that? Because, for example, we all know that this problem is actually going to grow as the time goes by. So I want to know that what is it that your office is doing in ensuring that there is a planning for the future to try and address this challenge? I think I will pause there, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I would like to know whether you've made any input into the redrafting of legislation that will be to the reconstruction, so to speak, of the Directorate of Special Operations, because if I'm not wrong, there is a unit that was established to look at offences related to abuse of children. And just so that, that particular unit is not lost, have you made any input into that? And with regard to your organogram, do we necessarily have a replication of this at provincial level? And are all these offices at provincial level fully operational? At municipal level, you've given us statistics, 188 out of 231 municipalities. I don't know which is the correct figure. I know they are so-called cross-border municipalities. However, I'm inclined to believe that there may very well be something in the region of 280 municipalities in the entire country. Why is it that your figure is lower than that? And who then funds those offices in municipalities? And if you do not, let us say, for example, national government doesn't fund research capacity. You will know that the Human Sciences Research Council does a lot of work. I've got one of their publications here, and so does the University of Cape Town, the Child Institute, and so forth. You do this kind of work, which is critically important, on your own, or do you bring these institutions on board so that quality research can then be done, or is it just a documentary with Child Network? Thank you very much. That's the lawyer. Thank you.
Before you, Honorable Moses, it will be Honorable Lebenya, she's from Pentimon.
I wanted to check that in establishing a ORC offices at municipal level, are you actually going to advise them on the structure that they must actually follow? Because I think that is very important, rather than allowing municipalities to actually choose how they want to structure those offices in order for them to be effective. And secondly, do you have ongoing programs rather than, you know, this one-day event where you just have a fun day for one day? Do you have ongoing programs? And lastly, for example, it's not another point, it's a link to the point that I've just asked. For example, we've got this a day which is taking a girl child to work. Do you intend maybe making input on such programs to ensure that at a later stage you do have actually, you know, we will see results of such programs, or are they just done for the sake of being done? Do you actually make input to ensure that there is something that we get at a later stage? Thank you.
Honorable Moss.
Thank you, Chair. Once more, thanks for a very good, progressive report. Chairperson, I've got two education-related questions. The one is quality education, and obviously, to me, that is key for the development of any child. What is the cooperation with the Department of Education, Social Development, Health and Home Affairs when it comes to quality education? Because it starts from grade R level, from the cashier, grade R and so on. What is the cooperation there? Are the departments really giving their cooperation? Because it will affect them in future. The other question is around the mass literacy campaign. If every child is educated, then we won't need that mass literacy campaign. It's still in its infant stage, but what is ORC's role in that, how effective do you think will your involvement be there? Thanks. Okay.
I just found one of the most exciting things in your presentation was the fact that the children that the children heard on the national energy policy, and that they were enabled to present their input to the minister and the Department of Mineral Energy. I think that's absolutely so exciting, and I think it would be wonderful if on crucial issues and problems that are facing this country, particularly environmental ones, because children relate to those so well, if they can be involved in formulating policy. Quite often they come up with such creative ideas that, you know, that the adult population has left behind in their childhood. So I think that's wonderful. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, this was my last question. The issue of the school pledge. I want to check that did you have any role to play in actually ensuring that children are given an opportunity to make input with regard to that, on how they feel about it.
Another
month.
The person that's woman next to me, she needs to also to ask more questions. That's honorable member. I don't want to be beaten by her. Chairperson,
we mentioned about the situation in Alexandra, which is very shameful, I think. Do you have programs to address the needs of refugees further? Right? And my other question would then be, children over the age of 40 who are not covered by grants, what would your role be to ensure that these children are not falling, since they are falling outside the grant? How are they being assisted? What role do you play in that area? Thanks.
I'll just add one or two that have been left by honorable members. The one would be the issue about the increase of food, which actually affects the children. Have you had any input and what is actually the plan? Two, have you taken part or have you made any input in the substance abuse bill in publication bill? And the child justice bill? And how do you go about it in public in making children aware of this bill? Thank you. It's over to you.
Also works well for the UN report, except the 8 sorry for the AU report, except the AU has specific other articles in the AU charter for the rights and welfare of the child there that are not similar to the AU, to the UN articles. Just as an example, the AU charter would also say, amongst other sections in itself, in the document, that a child also has a children don't only have rights, we also have responsibilities. And the AU does not, the UN does not take on responsibility. So when we report to the AU, we have to also include information on how, as a country, we are enabling children to be responsible in terms of the AU charter. So those little peculiarities are what makes the report to be different when we send them to the different institutions, AU and the UN. So that's the data process in terms of AU and UN response in our country as driven by ORC. There was a question from one honorable member to say, what does ORC do to enable municipalities to do right in terms of delivery on children's rights? That it is not only enough to say, let's establish ORC in municipalities and leave it at that. Indeed, ma'am, we also believe that you can't just say, let's establish and move out. So what we have since done is to develop something that we call the Children's Rights Delivery Guide for Municipalities, and that guide is what we are using currently. When we talk about capacity, in our context, it also means going to municipalities and going, walking them through that Children's Rights Municipality Delivery Guide. And in some instances, also starting out projects with them in their municipalities to say, this is how we believe it should be done. And together, we learn with them. And when we move out, then they continue with the processes. So we also are very cognizant of the fact that, you know, when we say we are in a developmental stage, it is really true that we are in a developmental stage. You don't just give documents and hope people will know what to do with those documents. It is important that we work together to make certain that we use them that are really
autonomous. Can I just ask, is there a document that is a guide? I mean, it would be so useful to have it in our constituency office, or at least for us to have copies of that.
We will circulate to the chairperson's office. Thank you. The issue of child-headed households, indeed, ORC is very concerned about the issue of childhood headed out, and we believe in the ORC that we actually can overcome this particular phenomenon as a country. There's a study that currently we are doing with UCT. Honorable Chair, you wanted to know if we do engage these institutions. There's a study that we currently do with UCT and UNICEF. The situation analysis on the status of children, or the status of children in the country as we speak. In that study, that one of the preliminary findings, it's not finalized yet, but one of the preliminary findings is that we have in the country, we have the child population in the country is 18 million. And according to that study, 6% of the 18 million are children living in child-headed households. So we believe once you start disaggregating that, you know that there are this number of children in the different provinces. And when you look at it that way, it is doable that we can overcome this thing. And from ORC's point of view, how we can overcome the phenomenon of child-headed households is if we seriously reintegrate children in child-headed households into extended family systems. A pilot project was actually undertaken by the NCF, the National Children's Rights Committee, together with Department of Social Development and also together with UNICEF, to see if it is possible indeed to reintegrate children. And that was done very successfully. Because in that process, what the process used was to say, a certain family that wants to integrate children but cannot because they are poor, how do we then strengthen that? And we then realized that in the country we have all these policies and resources, such as social development and grants, education says no fees for children who come from poor families. Right? Also has a policy that says health care could be free for children in poor families. So when you look at all these things, you know that you can strengthen extended families that are poor to take care of children. And that's what that process used, and it worked very well. So we then said, if DSD, Department of Social Development, has tested this thing out with these partners, we should actually be rolling it out in all provinces to make certain that we remove children from childhood households into family situations. So, you know, when you look at what happens in a child-headed household, you know that it's a very conducive environment for violation of children's rights. So as Office on the Rights of the Child, we are saying to DSD, to Department of Social Development, we can't go on like this. We have to do something about reintegrating children. So that's what we are driving social development at this point in time around child-headed households. Redrafting of legislation around special operations and whether or not ORC is involved, just to say no, we have not engaged that particular process, but I think we know that we have to engage it and be certain the way. The organogram of the ORC as we shared it and whether it's replicated in the other spheres of government. We observed when we just did our initial little study as well, see that in every province and in every municipality, we do different things as government in terms of establishing our offices on the right of the time. They are not the same. So we then realized that if we continue this way as a country, we will have problems because in some instances we won't be able to actually deliver in terms of protecting children. So we went to the Department of Public Service, DPSP, to say we don't have competencies around how to structure ORC at provincial level and at municipal level. You, DPSA, have that kind of competence. So work with us to see what kind of systems need to be put in place. We have, the DPSA has just given us their draft recommendation and framework, which we are meeting with them next week also to discuss. And once we have discussed that, then we will take it through the process. We are hoping that cabinet will approve those framework. Because then that's the tool we will use to say to provinces and municipalities, when we say establishment of ORC, this is what we mean, these are the functions it must do, this is how it must do that. So that process hopefully
will
be completed this year and
finalized. Can I just interrupt for time and say that in that case, you know, to the extent that we are in that country have what I would describe as a quasi federal system, you know, the coordination and so forth, the upcoming bill to integrate with administration and prosecute here would be very important that you watch that.
Thank you very much. I think one of the referring to the thing you said yes, we note that we did not talk about the date for AU and National Children's Day, and indeed in future I think we will do that, and also maybe in addition say briefly what the objectives of those things are.
If you could just send that information, I know children, there is someone in school, so children just around the corner.
Yes. Yes. I think I've already touched on the structure of ORC within the municipalities. Take a girl child to work, whether or not we've engaged this process. Yes, we have. Actually, when, you know, the Take a Girl Child to Work program is actually a private sector. It's driven by CELSI. But we did go to CELSI as ORC to say, because our concern when we went there, our concern was, why are we continuing to just take the girl child to work? Initially, we thought it was important because as a country, we needed to affirm women development. So the girl child thing was very good. We were very happy about that. But we believe we're at a time now where we have to expose both the boy. Oikas and the Deltas to these places of work. So we went there to say, Selfie, why don't we then consider to now translate into taking terrorism to work instead of just the Deltas? But they did indicate that they will not be able to do that because it is a contract they have signed with somebody in the US, so it must be that way. But we agreed ultimately with them that there needs to be a program that will look at all children going to. So in terms of this particular program, ma'am, you also raised the question whether these programs are once-off and why, whether or not we are comfortable with them being once-off on that day and that day. I think these programs, the Day of African Child, the National Children's Day, Take the Girl Child to Work, Fun Day, are really highlights of work that has been going on. Because just ordinarily, we continue to advocate for children, for childhood, for children to be children in the country. I think on that day, what we are doing is just to try and focus the nation to say we need to do this. And also around the Day of the African Child, continuously we stay in different departments through different types of work. We continue in work. We continue to say children must understand that they are Africans and to be African means 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But on that day, you want to just focus the nation on that issue and remind us. So we see them as just as highlights of advocacy around whatever issue it is. And therefore, in that way, we don't see those days as standalone ones, or we see them just as a cherry on top to strengthen the work that we have been doing. Quality education and what ORC is doing, and whether or not we are working with departments, indeed, honorable member, it is very important that we work with all the integrated action around quality education, and that's what we are doing within the Children's Rights Advisory Council. And if you remember the APEC priority for children, as we shared with the portfolio committee some time last year, one of the issues was for us to work very closely within the sector around quality education. So we continue to do that, and we continue on a quarterly basis, beginning this quarter, which is June. We should be receiving reports on what we are doing from different spheres of government on what, how far we are going, how much we are doing and how far we have got in terms of quality education. That information, obviously, when we come to report, is what we will share with the portfolio committee here. The school pledge is also part of that, because we see the school pledge as another strategy to strengthen national identity for children. So indeed, we are we did not input as ORC, but our children's rights focal point in the Department of Education did do that and share with us what they had, and we agreed with the plan. Programs for refugee children. As ORC, we have not gone out of our way to do specific work with children, refugee children, but we do know that the Home Affairs Department, and they do report to us, work with children, refugee children. I think we could do a lot better as a country around our work with refugee children at this point in time. The issue of grants and children over 14 years. One of the APEC priorities for children, children's rights in the children's sector, is to develop a poverty eradication strategy for children. And within that context, the issue of children who are 14 years, above 14 years, is going to be picked up. We are not certain how, what the strategy will actually be, because we have not finalized work in that particular area. But indeed, we also are concerned that as the grant goes incrementally on a year-to-year basis, we still have children living in poverty without any support, and this is why we believe the child poverty, anti-poverty strategy should then be able to pick up on what we do with those children. Issue of price increase, food price increases, we have not as ORC engaged that particular issue yet, and we know we must engage with the sector, but we had made this the film and publication bill and child justice bill, we participate in the interdepartmental committees that are working on this.
Some of the questions that have been answered. Another filler question can come.
Yeah, I think sorry, the name is?
Labor.
The last name?
Ranta.
Okay. Mrs. Ranta, I think you responded not directly to my question about collaboration between the ORC and academic institutions and HSRC and the like. But it was with regard to child murderers, for example, because special assignment could go and do a documentary on that, of course, with elements of research. But I would imagine that you would want to understand the psychology of a child network, and if that is the objective, do you then have the capacity? And based on your budget, it doesn't seem to me that you have that kind of capacity that would enable you. You may very well have a template that you would use to interview murderers of children and so forth, but is that really enough? Because that kind of evidence would really go a long way towards understanding what really drives us to kill a child, the mother, the father, or just a stranger. Just one new question, Chevy. With regard to the MDGs 4 and 5, health, child, maternal, and newborn, child, maternal, newborn, and child survival, you call them. Are you part of the process? Recently, there was a launch of the countdown. And there was a dispute about the incidence of child mortality in South Africa and so forth. Who should we believe, UNICEF, or do we have our own statistics with integrity and so forth? Because often when there are arguments about statistics, so many children are dying before the age of 2 or 1 or whatever, UNICEF saying one thing and then Department of Health saying another. That's a bit unfortunate. And I would like to know whether you are actually part of that process. And I know you link up mostly with the executives, AU, UN, and so forth. But there's also the Interparliamentary Union. Although it doesn't have, its decisions are not binding on member parliaments, but a lot of what comes out of the IPU, the impact also on the work, like we dealt with the issue of during the AU ITU assembly here in Cape Town, the 18th of April, with the whole issue of MDGs 4 and 5. And I think Parliament is taking up those issues.
I'm sure the Honourable Member should have dealt with the issue of health facilities and our capacity to do that. Indeed, we do not have the capacity to do research, and in that context, therefore, we engage service providers, researchers, to help us with that. At this point in time, I just did not mention that correctional services ourselves and actually STEP South Africa are together working with a service provider who is a researcher, so that's what they are doing. And ORC is very cognizant of what we are good at and what we don't have capacity to do. Where we don't have competencies, we just go immediately to the rightful competencies to solve them, to help us to do those settlements. The issue of child mortality, indeed, UNICEF quotes different figures all the time, and Department of Health quotes different statistics. ORC works with statistics that are that is generated from the Department of Health. So therefore, if we ourselves are always not agreeable with what UNICEF is saying, and we have engaged UNICEF on that to say, UNICEF, we don't understand how you arrive at these figures, because what we have in the country in terms of our statistics are these figures. In some instances, UNICEF indicates that they extrapolate, like this thing of extrapolating. You know, you look at a figure, and then you extrapolate, and then you arrive at whatever figure it is. So UNICEF knows that ORC is not comfortable about how they also present figures. But that's an issue that I think we either should continue to deal with UNICEF or agree to disagree on as we move on. But as government, we have to use the statistics that we have in our Department of Social Development and in SET South Africa, SET testing. Engagement of ORC with the Inter-Parliamentary Union. I think we must confess we are not too good up as ORC in terms of details around structures in Parliament. But listening to what you have just said, Honourable Member, it seems to me that that is a structure within Parliament that we must also engage. Maybe what we should find out from the Portfolio Committee is whether we engage that structure directly or whether we engage the structure through the JMC. And I think that's what we have to get here. But I think it is important for us to look at that. There was also a question, Chair, that I should have attended to that related to budgets for municipalities around children's rights in the government. You know, in the work that we do, we emphasize all the time to our municipalities and even provinces and departments that it is critical, once we have agreed what we have to do as a sector, at the state of government, to then mainstream our agreements and work and performance targets into, if I'm at municipality level, to mainstream all that into the IDP process. If I'm in the province, to do that at provincial level, and in the department at departmental level. Because if we don't mainstream those targets in those areas, they are not budgeted for. And if they are not budgeted for, we don't deliver. So one of our critical work with municipalities especially, is to work to help our municipalities to mainstream what we say is important for them to do around child protection and development in IDP processes. But that's part of capacity building for us, the work that we do under capacity.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going a little bit out of the box here. Part of your broad vision, and I think this was triggered for me by the whole business of children being involved in the energy policy making processes. One of the aspects of your broad vision is working for a better Africa and a better world. And one of the fundamental rights of everyone in this country, and that includes children, is to have a voice and to be enabled to participate. And I just wonder if you do have an aspect of your work that does consider enabling children to participate in whether it's at municipal level or at in the broader context of policy making or thinking, but in a disciplined and in a formalized and in a systematic fashion. I mean, we see what is happening in the UK now, where there are several youth all over parts of England that are extremely destructive. And you see it happening here. Yeah, I mean, you've only got to look at what happened with the AGM of the youth, where it happened there. And I just think that along the way, as part of your thinking and guidelines, that that children should be enabled to come into the processes at a very young age so that they become used to participating, but doing it in a disciplined and systematic fashion, and that is fun as well. Otherwise, you won't find them there, and you will find them. It also enables them to begin speaking in a way that where they have to think about what they're saying. And it's just a thought I'm throwing into the pot, but it shouldn't be all about protecting children. It is that your core mandate is to protect and provide them with the equipment to lead a quality life. But part of that should also be teaching children how to participate in a useful fashion in society.
Can I ask you that when you respond, we continue the second session, because at around about 11, we're expecting the NYC, so that I know that you'll make it in the minutes that are remaining, just to go through, so that when the bells ring, then we'll only be discussed then. I'm just anticipating that the bells will ring one day. But if you could rush.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say yes, Honourable Member, we do have a template for child participation, but I think the challenge you are throwing to us is to say we should institutionalize child participation so that it becomes a way of life in those things that we do. So we certainly will look at how we do that. Thank you. In terms of continuing, continuation, I was going to say, is in the document, yeah? Page 13, I think, of the first document. I'm not going to go into to discuss the whole operational plan for 08-09. I will just focus on our key performance areas this year. And I think honorable members can, at their own measure, look at the details there. Our operational plan speaks to our key performance areas this year based on our core functions. It also speaks to the steps per area that we will follow, who is accountable for doing what, that our budget for the work that we are going to do in that key performance area, our indicators and our performance targets as we have set them for ourselves. Our first key performance area this year around mainstreaming of best interest of the child is to finalize initiatives that we started last year. And some of them have already touched on, so we are finalizing this year. For that area of finalizing, and that includes printing of documents, it includes consultations, it includes all that we have put aside. We have budgeted 200,000, and also this is based from our experience in doing this kind of work. Secondly, this year we will be focusing very heavily on simultaneous children's rights, mainstreaming, coordination, and oversight in government and civil society, because this will enable us, again, when we report to the UNAU and even to the portfolio committee here, to report in a manner that does not only look at the work that we do on children's rights in government, but also look at the work that we do as in civil society as a nation around children's rights. The third thing that we will be focusing on this year is implementation of the children's rights delivery guide. In fact, we should say strengthening of implementation, because this implementation thing has already started, but we should continue with that. The fourth thing that we're going to do that we are busy with this year is to review the initial South African Children's Charter. In 1993, the National Children's Rights Committee worked with its NGO partners to enable children to produce something that is called the South African Children's Charter. Observers oversee that it's an outdated document, so we are saying children must get together, and once again, we should enable them to get together and revise that children's charter. Also, we are planning a regional conference on international cooperation for cross-border protection of children in Southern and Eastern Africa. This week we are doing with the Hague Conference and a number of other partners, the key steps will indicate that, what partners we are involved with. So this is, again, a very important thing for us this year. The other thing that we will be doing this year is to review and update all our children's rights mainstreaming tools for the three spheres of government. So under mainstreaming, that's what we will be doing. Under capacity building, we are going to continue to hold our annual children's rights facilitation, coordination, and oversight training program again. We will also facilitate the strengthening of children's rights facilitation, coordination, and oversight competencies in individual local municipalities and departments, and we are targeting a specific number of municipalities for intensive training, and that's what we are going to be doing. Thirdly, we are going to train trainers to accelerate children's rights mainstream coordinating and M&E training for youth. We realize that ORC, that there are, as honorable members correctly pointed out, there are 280 something municipalities in our country. And as ORC, we are finding it very difficult to reach everybody. So we then agreed that we are going to train trainers who then will support at provincial level, the provincial ORC, to reach those municipalities and to continue to strengthen their competencies around children's rights. So that's the one thing that we'll be doing this year around capacity building. We have also agreed with somebody that the training material that we have been using over the years, over the past 4 years, should be consolidated into an accredited children's rights mainstreaming manual and program. Because in that way, we think we will encourage people to specialize in children's rights mainstreaming. The other thing that we'll be doing this year is continue with child participation in governance processes. Ma'am, I know this is the part that you like, so we are going to continue with that, child participation. And also, okay. The last thing that we will be doing under capacity building this year is to operationalize the guide for overseas and departmental 7-5 points as a 3 years of government. Here, this is the DPSA thing that we are talking about, and also to see how does it then strengthen what we have to do at departmental level, municipality, and provincial level. Under monitoring and evaluation this year, we are finalizing the sectoral framework, M&E framework, as I said earlier on. We are finalizing our report to the AU and the UN. As I said, these reports will be deposited with these institutions in December this year. We will also be activating the M&E framework that we spoke about. And again, this year we are excited under M&E because this is where we said we are going this year to activate, even if we do two or three issues, when we bring departments to our portfolio committee here, honorable members, so that we then see portfolio committee, the children's portfolio committee, talking to those different departments around children's rights. As an example, segregated household was one issue that we thought we should bring the Department of Education, social development, all related departments, for the portfolio committee then to talk to them directly and ask questions in terms of how far we are about working those protecting children in those areas. And then harmonization of age definition in South Africa. As we know, we have different types of ages and different legislation that define children. So ORC and social development in the social cluster started the first process that seeks to harmonize age definition of children in South Africa's legislation. And we are being guided by the fact that Constitution says children are 0 to 18. So we want all legislation, when it talks about children, to talk about 0 to 18. Facilitate, that's the report that I talked about. And we are also this year busy with a sectoral 15-year children's rights 15-year review. Dating 1994 to date, what have we achieved as a country, what are our challenges, and so on and so on. And other than that, we are going to do this year again, at the end of this year, we do the normal annual sectoral performance evaluation and planning meeting. And and then the other stuff is governance issues, what we should be doing around governance matters, to hold our normal strategy plans and to do the governance issues. So all in all, Chair, we have costed every part of our work, and this is what then leads us to the 5 million that we talked about. Honorable members, they wanted to know if we have a way of convincing the presidency that we need this kind of resource, and we believe that our operational plan and ORC's track record in terms of performance on our operational plan is what we will use to try and persuade presidency to provide us the resources we need to do the work that we must do. But indeed, it would be helpful also if the portfolio committee could put in a good way for us. So that then we are able to have our case strengthened. But the third chapter that is this, the two other reports at the end are just for information for honorable members, just to say when we are at a performance evaluation and planning meeting, what do we do? And that report is indicated. And also when we do our training, annual training program, what exactly do we do? That report is in here will also indicate exactly what we do in those areas. So in short, Chairperson, that is our report. We would have requested that if time allows NCR to say a bit about the civil society mainstreaming program, if it is possible.
I think your colleague can shoot ahead in a few minutes so that then we ask.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members, for the opportunity to present. As it's been mentioned in the previous presentation, that there is a simultaneous film flash mainstreaming for government and civil society. And this presentation I'm making is basically two parts, presenting one, the rationale for this multi-year transformation in both civil society and government around change, right? And on the other hand, indicating what kinds of milestones.
So, is it in the document?
No.
Oh.
Okay. But it will be, I'll flag this. Okay. Our mandate as a state to advocate for and promote human rights in a manner that ensures collective action in civil society. This is a historic mandate as at a point when the Civil Rights Commission was established in 1990. Here we just have a few highlights of basically what the kind of track record
was just on the age, I'm a 19-year-old. Let me say again, Jefferson. Unfortunately, I wasn't there with the answer from the president from 15 to 4th aunt. Older than 14 to 4th aunt, she's a child. But if you look at the Department of Labor, the Department of Labor says that children from the age 15 can work. Okay. Child grants are getting grants after the age 40. Okay. You find situations from the age 18 you can vote. At school age, a child in younger than 50 should be at school. You can marry at age 16. Conceptual sex is 16 younger. So there's no one. This commission works from age 50. That's the misuse. Younger and then children. So the thought is to do that, to bring that uniformity and have it started. And how to go over. Thanks.
Welcome, Honorable Demand. You can respond.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say yes, we have started the within, as you know, within government there are clusters, okay? Social cluster, economic, and this issue of harmonization is dealt with within the social cluster, which is where you have all these departments sitting in. So it is within that context that the age harmonization is happening, as led by both OSU and Department of Social Development within that context. But the social cluster did also say we have to review all legislation and recommend moving forward as a country what we should be doing. So that's the process that I'm talking about. With regard to, we are particularly as ORC interested in talking to bilateral, to youth commission around this issue, because youth commission also feel very strongly that they have to capture children, young people from 14, from a young age, from 14. And do what Youth Commission does with youth, with them until they are adults. We insist we should be a feeder program for Youth Commission. So that discussion hasn't reached any, between the two of us, hasn't reached any conclusion yet. We are still struggling with that between the two of us. But that is a bilateral thing. That does not take away from the fact that there's this holistic thing that we are also seeing in Kevin.
Now, but I take it that this harmonization and the target date of April is which April? Because that was the target. April, that is one. Two. There's another target which was supposed to meet in May, training of trainers. It's quite critical. The target date is April, at least in May 2008. And how far?
Chair, we had been struggling with who. I think we want to train the people we are targeting are the community development workers. So we have been struggling to get the list per province of who should be training. So as soon as that list is finalized, we are ready to do the training, because we're doing the training with UNICEF.
But if you do the training and of all the municipalities, provinces, or something, and where there are cities that will, if you have got a certain figure, now you can start training. You don't need to wait for the others to come. They will just find you on the way. Otherwise, the target will shift and shift and shift. So this is quite critical. Honorable demand.
I again, firstly, to register that I need documents before coming to the meeting. I don't know who's wrong in this instance, but I, when it's ORC and Youth Commission appearing, it gets to do someone over there, it's going to come along where they do provide documents. I need documents, I can't compromise. Next time, I'll be fired. Can't take any notice anymore of not getting documents in time. But then, be that as it may, the answer to the question in relation to the harmonization of age, perhaps she could be, if she could be more detailed or more specific, at what level, is it a policy level or just working arrangement? Because all of these different age situations, they are informed by different legislation. And certainly, as I'm aware, there's no legislation that's going to come before us, Chair, that is harmonizing the age. So for me, it's just not sure, unless she says that the harmonization is really for officials to be able to work. Yeah, because all of them, these age differences are set for particular purposes within the context of the legislation and specific targeted programs. For instance, social offences, the Act will talk something else for a particular context. The Children's Bill, for instance, will talk the age of 18. But allowing certain ages to transact, for instance, child-headed households at 15 and that type of thing. So unless she just talks programmatic streamline in terms for working arrangements between the departments, but I don't foresee coming as a policy change chair or as a legislation change. I might be wrong, but if she could really share the more specific details on that. Thanks.
Thanks, Manda. And the first contribution from Honorable Manda was not a request. It was just a reminder. I'm sure you have just written that it should be another reminder that you need these documents. Not that we all need them. Because we will be failing even to read in brain if we also don't have them. So please make it a point, don't disappoint us next time. Thank you, your comment.
Thank you,
Chair.
But first, maybe to apologize to Honorable Member, I think he is right. We should do right by him and by everybody, actually. So we will make certain action that we bring out yesterday. Around harmonization of age, a document has been developed in the ORC, motivating, looking at our reality right now, which says, indeed, as Honorable Member there indicated, that according to Labor, Department of Labor, this is the age according to, you know, the different departments. So we have done an analysis of that, and we have said based on this analysis, and also based on the fact that in terms of the Constitution of South Africa, which is the overarching legislation, and children is 0 to 18, therefore, there is need to review existing legislation and to streamline and align it to what the Constitution is saying. That document has been produced and submitted to the social cluster. Our understanding is that once it has been discussed and agreed within that cluster, then the next process would be to translate that into, if it is that everybody's agreed in terms of consultation, to translate that into a policy development process that then should be industry policy that says we have to review legislation and align it as a country to ensure that in that way we are aligned to the Constitution in terms of child, in terms of definition of child. So we have done that. In the ORC, what we have also observed, Honorable Chair, is that service departments are service delivery structures. And within a service delivery structure, to facilitate service delivery, it sometimes makes sense within that service delivery context to then use different ages to ensure that service is delivered. As an example, the issue of child-headed households. I think in terms of making certain that children in child-headed households also access existing resources and crisis intervention resources, it was important to then say a child of 15 years, can be head of the family. And in that sense, they then, using that legislation, would be able to then access certain resources. But from a children's rights point of view, that does not work, because then we are violating in different ways the rights of the child. And this discussion in the document that we presented, that we have developed, that is the discussion we are raising, to say we can't say we are a child rights sensitive nation, but still in some instances go that route in terms of defining age. So the discussion really is around this kind of issue, and hopefully as a country we find a way forward in terms of our career. Thank you.
Any other last points? So in the absence of questions, thanks very much from the ORC and your colleagues. We always enjoy our interaction. And we hope to see you where you implement these things. And please do invite us as a committee where possible, because you've got an interest. Thanks very much.
Look, some of the material within the Bureau of the ORC, we need to have sight of the documentation provided training for public consumption on their side. They can only send that to us.
Thanks very much. This presentation is adjourned. We're sitting with one challenge. We're informed that some of the members might be called at any time to go and vote. So if that happens, don't be surprised. We'll have to suspend the presentation. And the Honorable Chairman will contact with the correct information. But so that so we'll await any situation. So can we please start and apologize if we don't finish, because I'm feeling myself by Thursday that's not to leave. But I'm sure
sure we will take that.
Thank you, Honourable Member. In view of the challenge that the Chair has already indicated, we'll try to be as economical as we can with time, so that at least we can be able to present the things that we needed to put in front of the table of members today. Without wasting time, I've got a Commissioner Rico next to me. He is also the chairperson of the Finance Committee in the Commission, which is why also he's relevant to be in this meeting. Our Director of Corporate Services, responsible for our finances, is Winnie Mazibeke. And far left is the CEO of the Commission, Ms. Yulisa Makhaya. As the committee has requested us to present on two things, our strat plan, 208-209, and also present our budget for this financial year. So in front of you, we've got the presentation, which is going to deal with both those aspects. I will take you through the strat plan, and Commissioner El Rico will deal with the issues of the budget, just to indicate some of the things that are sort of supporting, from a rent and sense point of view, the kind of activities that we have decided for the year. Safe to say that there are five areas that indicated the background, our key programs, as we have indicated in some presentations, the cluster priorities, our administration, and the budget. On the background, quickly, members, here we are just seeking to highlight the key programs that are found in our revised plan 207-2011. I just want to mention that in August last year, as NYC, we engaged in a strategy review session to just look at the things that we have agreed upon and how can we also plan forward and ensuring that our strategic plan is aligned to our operational plan, which therefore gave rise to our 2007-2011 strategy. Now we'll be focusing on the priorities of 208-209 as requested. On key programs, understanding that our main work centers around on these areas, firstly advocacy and lobbying. Members will be aware that since we took in office, we came in a process where the National Development Policy Framework was being reviewed. So we'll finalize that particular process, and the main thing for this financial year is to finalize that process and get that policy adopted by Cabinet. Most work has been done, and hopefully that it will be adopted. And obviously, one of the expectations in the Act is that while the Commission will develop the policy, it must ensure that an implementation plan evolves out of it for the implementation of those policy areas, which is something that this financial year in the main will be focusing on. We've started the work with the government department and looking at broadening the participation to ensure a buy-in of other stakeholders. And also an MME tool, which is one of the gaps that was identified with the first generation policy, that we didn't have any MME tool to sort of measure the performance of the different stakeholders. So that's one of the things that we'll be focusing on. And research on institutional mechanisms. As members are aware, we've been speaking about this since late last year, about the possible remodeling of the institutions of youth development. It was also articulated in the State of the Nation of the President, the review of the institutions like ourselves, who will fund. So as a commission, we're also undertaking a research of looking at remodeling now that we've seen what are the challenges, what are the weaknesses of the current institutions, what are the things that can be learned from there, and moving forward, what are the recommendations that can be put forward. On legislation and monitoring, strengthening the capacity of our parliamentary office, undertaking legislation monitoring, make youth submission to relevant policies and legislation being developed to ensure that youth issues are integrated. Safe to say that even currently, Commissioner Rico, as a person responsible for the JCPS cluster, has been here in Cape Town on the public hearings on the substance abuse bill. As part of that work, we will be making a presentation next week on Tuesday on our own submission as a youth commission, is that work of trying to ensure that we make those submissions in as far as education is concerned. Obviously, strengthening youth parliament is part of our MME tool, which is something that I think we've also raised with the members, even in the third plan that took place this year, that for us, we want to ensure that youth parliament is one of the platforms that is utilized for monitoring and evaluation of what has happened in the country in as far as supporting youth development. And obviously, strengthening our participation in the various clusters of government that ensures the POA of government is adhered to. On the research side and M&E, our priorities there are coordinating and develop the relevant research. As I've mentioned, the institutional mechanism, we started last year with a study on the youth directorates in the different government departments. That is a study that we are finalizing to ensure that that study is presented in the social cluster of government to give a reflection of how government departments have been performing in establishing these focal points to coordinate the implementation of youth development. That is a study that we are finalizing as a commission and prioritize to ensure that beyond that study, beyond it being presented to the social cluster, we utilize it as part of the advocacy tool to be able to indicate to the departments that have moved on establishing these focal points the challenges that are brought by that particular setback. Obviously, developing a knowledge management system, which has been one of the weaknesses in the commission, because we've got a lot of work that is undertaken, but we do not have a concrete knowledge management system to capture the work that we are doing. We've spoken about the Youth Dialogue Program, which its intention is to really have young people debating about a number of topical issues. We launched it last year in the Eastern Cape. It has been taking place. One of the areas in this year, we've managed to, with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, to agree on a youth lecture that will precede the main lecture of the Nelson Mandela as part of giving young people an opportunity to reflect on their own views. So this is a youth dialogue program that to us is very important because also it contributes to the research. Because out of the debates and views that young people are expressing there, you get to know what are the things that young people on their own are saying on different matters. Obviously, developing an annual report on the performance of the state institutions is one of the areas that is prioritized in that regard. The National Youth Service members would know that this is one of the biggest and priority programs which currently is being led by the Deputy President, and as a commission we've got a responsibility of ensuring a successful implementation of the National Youth Service. And with our challenges, one of the things that we have prioritized for this financial year is building capacity of the Provincial Youth Commission to be able to ensure that when these national opportunities are unlocked with the various departments, Provincial Youth Commissions are able to ensure that implementation takes place. Strengthening lobbying and advocacy to ensure massification. As members would know, in the last financial year, one of the things that a government has committed itself is the massification of the National Youth Service Program. Because one of the challenges has been that the NYS is just a program that happens in small pockets of areas. So then there was a need to massify the program, and therefore we need capacity to ensure that you are able to sustain that kind of activity and broadening of the program. Coordination, as the commission started last year to establish a national steering committee, which we have evolved into provinces, where as commissions we get all the relevant departments which have got a responsibility to implement the national service, so they are able to report on what are the things that they are doing, where are the programs, and sometimes where maybe other departments are unable to make the necessary commitment, we can come in as both the National Youth Commission and provinces. So it's one of the areas of strengthening that coordination. Well, that coordination has assisted us as the institutions of youth development to be able to coordinate even our input to prepare for the interministerial committee on the NYS. But when we go there, we're able to have a best-eye view picture of saying what are the problems and what is it that the IMC through the Deputy President must intervene on in terms of implementation. And of course, the monitoring and evaluation of the National Youth Service Program. The last area there is stakeholder management. as members would know, youth development is one of those areas that cannot happen without a multi-stakeholder coordination and participation. So it's one of the key focus areas of the Commission of ensuring that we have started to partner to ensure greater interaction with youth constituencies. We collaborate with similar institutions like Chapter 9. We started, I think, late last year in terms of working with the Chapter 9 and consolidating our work in that regard for partnerships. And also convening the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Affairs on a quarterly basis. And I must say, since last year, the participation in this committee has really picked up, because we always had problems of people not attending the meetings. Now they are attending, they are starting to attend the meetings of the Interdepartmental Committee, and obviously raised a number of issues and frustrations, some of them in the different departments that they are facing as units responsible for youth development, which therefore informs our cluster activity. Also the partnering with IEC, as we know that this is the year that precedes the national elections. We are finalizing with IEC our youth mobilization strategy for young people to participate in the democratic processes, specifically elections. Also on stakeholder management, is ensuring that we continue our obligation of the quarterly meetings of the Chairperson Forum to have discussions and coordinate work with provinces and the COs Forum. And then on cluster priorities, members, there is one paper that I think is attached there. I would like to start on the education and training. One of the things that I think we had identified and presented a number of times to the members is also ensuring synergy between ourselves and the Department of Education, and really the work that we have undertaken with them has started to see some results in terms of that particular relationship. We started with the Back to School campaign this year, and which is something that we've agreed that it must be followed up in a structured manner, so that beyond those visits of going to school, we're able to look at the trend.
Sorry, do all the members have this page?
Yes.
It's just one page that has got education and training.
Thank you, Chairperson. And then on the aspect of the National Youth Service and its expression on the education, members would know that they is the rollout of the literacy campaign, and as part of that, ensured in the discussion with the Department of Education that a link must be done with that literacy campaign with the National Youth Service program, so that we can already start to ensure that those young people that can in the different communities participate in the literacy campaign, both as educators and also as beneficiaries of the program. So there are discussions with the Department of Education of ensuring at an implementation level that is realized. We've agreed with them that sometime in July we will be having a summit on youth and education. One of the things that I think in the discussions that we've always had with them was to identify some of these problems that always arise during the back to school, the whole notion of matric failure rates, the whole notion of tertiary education, issues of access, issues of financial exclusion. And then we said we need to host a summit with the different youth formations, because amongst others, would know that there's been a lot of debates within the youth sector itself about some of the challenges in education. And by virtue of that, we said we need to have that summit that will craft a position of the youth sector on matters of education, and we have agreed that that must happen as part of our activities, and it's planned to take place in July. One of the programs that also is linked to the National Youth Service is a learner retention strategy that was started. I think provincial consultations happened last year in all the 9 provinces, where the Department of Education, PYCs, other provincial stakeholders were brought into workshops to present this learner retention strategy and to see to what extent all the various stakeholders can take up this particular program. So as a youth commission, we are a partner with the department on the learner retention strategy. And then there is a campaign on values. One of the things when members would remember the discussion on the youth pledge that was pronounced by the Department of Education. In our submission to them, we did mention to them that it is our understanding and belief that the notion of a pledge in South Africa is something that is correct and needs to be done, but the manner in which it was undertaken by the department, we really felt that it created challenges in the public space. And obviously, we would want to work with the department in ensuring that young people are able to own the pledge themselves and are able to participate and give their own expression to the pledge. And they've heeded that call, and we're engaging with them in starting the processes of consultation across young people to give input into the pledge. So these are some of the things that we are focusing on. And last year we had a conference on young of young women where we called Minister Naledi Pandor around the guidelines that the department was putting together on giving the learners who get pregnant in schools a 2-year maternity leave. So we had discussions in that young women conference where we had young women from all the 9 provinces, and one of the agreements and resolutions of that conference was to start a campaign in schools by the young women together with the Department of Education on the kind of messages that we need to be communicating, so that it's not only a matter of guidelines to say once you are pregnant then you're allowed to go on maternity, but we need to be able to understand what are the problems that are faced by these girls in schools, but also what are the kind of impact of the girl learner you know, getting involved into any sexual activities that prohibits them to economic participation, and also, I mean, qualifying in terms of their own education. So it's a campaign that we have agreed upon, which is one of the priorities for this particular financial year. On the going back to this document, you've got social cohesion there. As I indicated, Commissioner Rico here is here in Cape Town, I think, for about 2 days now. On the Demoja program that we also have presented, which is a program that focuses on the substance abuse, Demoja No to Drugs. It has been a program, it was launched last year. This year the main focus is to really take this program to the relevant communities, because the main thing is to ensure that what you have the national activities, national programs, but to what extent are those programs filtering into the communities. And we've made an input as a commission in the National Drug Master Plan, and in the National Drug Master Plan there is a clear responsibility of the commission, both at the level of national, provincial, but also to go down and establish local drug action committees where young people can participate in their various committees to fight drug abuse. Youth and elections, I've already mentioned it, the 2010 Soccer World Cup, we met with the 2010 Legacy Committee, and together with them we are developing a youth development approach to the legacy of 2010. Amongst others, is focusing on greening the environmental benefits and also other economic opportunities. Young women, youth dialogues, I've already mentioned, these are intended to strengthen our work on social cohesion, where young people can be able really to participate and are included in the processes of democracy in their communities. On economic participation, Youth and ISED is the Youth and Information Society and Development, which is a national program. This happened already. Now the only thing that is happening is the implementation of the Youth and ISED, because consultation started in 2006 with young people, which therefore evolved this Youth and ISED program. So it's taking implementation in the various provinces, with programs like the National Digital Repository, where young people are trained onto ICTs. They can be able to go back to their communities and try and trace the history of the community, develop documentaries on them. The other program of the Youth and ISED is your e-Kenya programs, where young people have been trained on ICTs and they will be sent into the municipalities where they can assist the municipality to develop their websites and be able to even upgrade some of the networks of the municipalities. So it's being implemented, this program. It's not being developed. It's already there. It was adopted by young people last year. The Youth Development Forum, members would remember last year we even reported about this. The Youth Development Forum was established, which is chaired by the Deputy President, co-chaired by the National Youth Commission, where we bring various private sector companies, parastatal, and be able to discuss with them. We did a study last year that demonstrated where the corporate social investment monies of these companies are going to, and we could see that there is a skewed allocation of those monies, and all that you are trying to do with the Youth Development Forum is to be able to marshal those resources so that they can respond to the current challenges that you are facing. One of the programs that was agreed upon last year was, amongst others, a cross-cutting to say companies, all of them that are in the Youth Development Forum and others that we'll be inviting, must take up the project that we call Adopt a School Project, which not only you adopt a school and you put in infrastructure, but you are responsible for all the other challenges that that particular school will face and be able to invest money across. So I think the Youth Development Forum, there are two working committees that have been established to look at the modalities now of implementing the Adopt a School Project and other projects that have been identified. So during the June month, we'll be announcing some of those particular programs and the companies that will be adopting particular schools in the different programs. One of the things that we have also looking at as part of economic participation is the GDS review. Members would know that through the Youth Commission, there was a youth summit that preceded the national GDS, and there was a youth input. So our interest was to trace to what extent were all those inputs realized by government. Amongst others, we know some of the things that came out of there is the skills development, focusing on skilling of young people. Those are some of the things that came out of there. But we're looking at reviewing the entire GDS and to what extent it has yielded results for young people. We've been approached by a youth organization called Youth Development Network, which is hosting a regional employment policy conference, which is going to be here in South Africa, which is focusing on SADC as a region, where it's looking at whether in these countries in SADC do we have employment policies that are seeking to ensure that there is an employment friendly environment for young people in the main. So that conference is going to be taking place, and we are making input both at the level of content and also in assisting in getting also some of the stakeholders into that conference, which out of that resolution of that conference, there will be local conferences in the different countries in SADC, so that we can be able to advocate for this area of having clear employment policies, because we are seeing that the issue of youth unemployment is becoming a crisis which all of us, are sort of trying to find answers to. So in the main, and that is what we are planning, focusing on issues of economic participation. On page 7, I'll speak on the last two, which is your local government and international relations. On local government, members would know that over time, since the commission was established, it had a partnership with the Flemish government, which was focusing in the main on developing the capacity of youth institutions and youth development practitioners in South Africa on local youth policy. How do you develop local youth policy? But how do you also translate that into implementation through programs, which is where you had study tours, taking people who are working in the municipalities, taking other young people who are activists in youth organizations to Belgium, where they stay for about 2 weeks and are dispensed to different communities in Belgium, which is working with youth, where they learn and are able to come back and say, these are the things that we have learned, we can implement. Now, but this partnership took a change last year, where the Flemish wanted to concentrate now on programmatic areas, which is arts and culture. And then there were 4 centers that were identified. One is in KZN, which is a best center. The other one is in Gauteng, which is Ibilegeng. Here in Western Cape, it's Nyanga Arts Center. And then another one is Mabane in Free State. So those are the centers that we identified which are participating in this program, where the Flemish puts in money to support these centers in terms of arts and culture, and the Youth Commission coordinates and monitors that those monies are really geared to youth development. The Youth and Democracy Week program, members even made an input, I think, in the last time when we're still at a conceptual stage of this particular program, where they even said it must be youth and democracy and human rights. This is the program that we're talking about that has got the elements of election, and we've been debating it with IEC, and it's being possibly going to be launched during our June month activity. Already, part of the element of it is the ID Yourself campaign, which we're doing it with the SABC, Department of Home Affairs, and the IEC, where it's focusing in the main in schools on grade 10, 11, and 12, for them to have IDs for broader service delivery, but also towards elections. And the program for capacity building for local youth units is one of the programs that we are continuing with. We're engaging with the Department of Local Government, and I must indicate that in the recent conference that we had with them on infrastructure at local government level, one of the milestones that we managed to achieve is the engagement now with the Department of taking the issue of establishing and the guidelines on local youth units into the department, and they are presenting it. The last time we got the report that they are presenting it in their senior management, which is going to go after that to the minister for it for the department to start now to send a message to all the different provinces, local government, to establish the local unit. Lastly, on international relations, I must say, honorable members, I think we would remember also last year when we were here, or the last time we spoke about the African Youth Charter, which is one of the international protocols that we really wish it to be ratified by South Africa. At this point, we've done our work, we've tabled all what we needed to do as a youth commission. We are having a challenge at this point because it has been sent back to us by the officials at the presidency that we must develop an implementation plan. But we are in the now at a point where we are writing to Minister Pahad about our concerns, about how the matter has been handled, and obviously at the same time we've agreed at ESCO that we will be also writing to the committee, the JNC, which will request your intervention on this particular matter, because now it seems this ratification is just being delayed over and over again. But also we have been engaged in bilaterals with other countries, the state of Qatar, Senegal recently, because part of what they wanted to cooperate on was youth development. So as a youth commission, we are responsible for the element of the cooperation on youth development. And there's a stakeholder forum that is coming, I think, this week, where we'll be tabling what is it we can cooperate on as South Africa and with the benefit of young people in South Africa and those of Senegal. So in the main, I think those are the priorities in terms of the cluster work that we do, that we thought we needed to inform the members on. Commissioner Elrico will start on the aspects of administration and go and zoom straight into the budget issue. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson of the Committee and Honourable Members. In terms of administration, the priority that we have identified is to improve our internal controls, align the strategic and operational planning to the budgeting processes as set out by the National Treasury, develop and implement internal policies to strengthen those policies of ours, develop an implementation human resource management strategy, and develop an anti-fraud and corruption policy. Those are the key priorities to enable us to do our work better. Around budget allocation, we received a budget of 24.333 million rand, less the creditors at the 31st of March, which were 3.7 million, and the available budget therefore is 20.6 million rand. I'm just going to give you an overall budget for standard items. Our salaries and staff cost is estimated at 14.350 million rand. Admin and operational expenses is at 3.9 million rand, and professional services, which are audit fees, 1.3 million rand. Youth month expenditure is our normal annual amount of 1 million rand, which then gives us a total of 20.6 million rand again, plus the priority program. Some of these cluster priority programs, we have to get departments to fund it. So the partners that they are engaging, they are then responsible to fund those programs. As you will see that I will get to our requested budget and what we actually got. So the budget doesn't really make provision for programs. Young Women's Network, we have put aside 100,000 rand. Apologies, I nearly said 100 million. That would be extremely ambitious. Youth leaders training for in terms of our foreign affairs or international relations. Kimoja campaign, youth social dialogue and youth democracy week, there is 100,000. That's for the entire year. So it's about 25,000 per quarter, which is not a lot to have available. The comparative years, if we look there at the expenses, personnel expenditure from 11.25 million to 14 million. The increase there, the differences in increase is due to our annual increases. We have not expanded the staff of the Youth Commission. So it's simply because of the annual increases, and we do think that if the CPIX is going up, that will not be sufficient because the agreement between unions and government is the CPIX plus, I think, 1 or 2% extra. So for the current CPIX being double digits, it means that the budget that we received is not sufficient. Admin and operation expenses, there's a decrease there. Professional services, there's also a decrease if we compare it. And the youth month is normally the same. Even if costs increase, we still get a million rand for that. And expected donor fund, we do not expect any changes in that donor funding at the moment, which is still at 1.2 million rand. So there's the comparative. The only major shift is with personnel, and it's an increase there, which is due to annual increases of staff members. In conclusion, our budget then shows that we have suspended the restructuring due to the pending merger between the National Youth Commission and the Umsobongo Youth Fund. We have definitely insufficient resources for our strategic plan. We requested initially a budget of 33.595 million rand, which we received 24.3 million rand, which then in terms of our strategic plan, a shortfall or a variance of 9.3 million rand, which is really priority programs that we were engaging with departments. Planned intervention, strategic partners, we have asked to deal with the shortage. We have asked our strategic partners, like government departments, to put in more of the resources in the implementation of these priorities. We are going back to National Treasury to look at how some of the key priorities can be funded by National Treasury. For example, the merger process, the policy and the institutional arrangement. And then we know that the elections is very important for next year. And then we've cut down on non-essential services, and we've done some cost cutting. For example, our telephone account, we have brought it down by putting in telephone limits. Also, the government card, we reduced it to only one. So it is a situation where we only do where it is extremely necessary. I guess in line of the merger, we are just being kept afloat in terms of our budget and priorities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to the NYC. That was very good and quick and sensitive to the time could break. I know some members have got to catch flight. And before I give members an opportunity, while the other presentation, I'll act as a short steward now. Honorable Louis raised an issue of him printing documents in time. And he's always disadvantaged that he's got to get them in braille. And with that to the other presenters, it is not a request, it's a reminder. That we do not disempower him. Honorable members, Honorable Silo, Honorable Zedania, Honorable Louis, that other.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the National Youth Commission for coming. Make this presentation. Having listened to the presentation, got all sorts of lofty goals, noble vision and stuff. I would like to know why is it that 70% of their resources, which they say towards the conclusion or in the concluding part that there are insufficient resources, why is it that these resources are not spent optimally to ensure that the lion's share, so to speak, of the resources are spent on the core business of the National Youth Commission? If you look at page 9 of the PowerPoint presentation, 70% of the total budget is spent on salaries and stuff. And you then have the routine items, this month expenditure, 5% on professional services, somebody's fees, whatever that means. Because talking about audit fees again, there is an anomaly or an aberration in the figure, in the sense that the audit committee did not meet in terms of, as expected, in terms of the relevant section 77B as it is of the Public Finance Act. And to the extent that you got the qualification, the audit committee operating almost as an audit early warning system within different institutions, the NYC being one of those, wouldn't you then attribute that lack of regular meetings of the audit committee to the qualification that you got? Now, I would like to know, with regard to the restructuring that you are saying you put on hold due to the major problems, are there any time frames in respect of this measure so that you do not indefinitely put the restructuring on hold when we do not know exactly when are you likely to merge with other institutions and so forth? I'll see, I think I still have a few other questions. I will give it a back, and if
comment. I would like to know that what plans do you have in strengthening the youth parliament, and what role can you play as a youth commission in ensuring that the recommendations that come out of the youth parliament do get implemented? Because, you know, there's a huge outcry out there from various youth organizations that they do participate in the youth parliament, they make recommendations or take resolutions, but they never see them getting implemented. The next issue that I would like to raise is on the point of local youth units. I think you partly covered what I was going to ask, but I want to ask that what is it that you are going to do to ensure that those youth units in all municipalities do get budgeted for? Because I think that is another problem that we do face at a local government level, whereby these structures, you know, get established, but they don't budget for, so they just exist and can't have any programs. And then on the issue of teenage pregnancy, I want it's a point of clarity that the two-year maternity leave that you alluded to, I hope it is not compulsory. I hope it is optional, because if it were to be compulsory, then that would disadvantage some of our young people who would want to continue immediately after, you know, getting released from that. And then I also recognize that you've got a lot of partnerships with the Department of Education. I want to check that do you have any partnerships with the Department of Sports and Recreation, for example? What is it that you are doing to try and ensure that there are recreational facilities, especially in rural areas, because you find that the youth don't have such facilities? What is it that you are doing in trying to ensure that those do exist? Thank you.
Honourable Louis.
Thank you, Chair. At least as a short start, you did diplomatic work. It's not going to be a bit rubbish. All right. I leave it at that. No, Chair, the previous presenters to us, the ORC, mentioned something on harmonization of age and some partnership work with the Youth Commission. Perhaps if they could share further light on that, harmonization of age, and also that it was an issue of the coverage of the Youth Commission in terms of the ages, covering the 14 or 15 in some of their programs. If they could share light on that one. Secondly, Chair, on the stakeholder management section, I think they did mention quite a number of stakeholders. With the benefit of the doubt that I had no documents, I would like to get some information in relation to the coordination of the civil society youth organization, Chair. There used to be something called the Youth Council. The South African Youth Council, yeah? Not sure whether it still exists. And, if it does, you know, what work is continuing there? That would be also in relation to the Presidential Working Group, Youth Working Group, as well, Chair. Also, in the structure, they talk about, it looks like, Chair, we're still at the entry point of everything in terms of what was presented here, for instance, the issue on the development, youth development policy framework, and remodeling, as you said, they talk about the research. They are still researching, so I'm not sure what are the targets, the date for this research to conclude, because my understanding was that by this year we will have finalized. By October, September, I think the minister was talking around those deadlines. I mean, that period as the time when we would have merged the structures that need to merge, and would have one policy table. I'm not sure what's the take in terms of that. Then also, Chair, the other matter relates to. There was some time back, there was a
presentation about a youth desk. I'm not too sure, Chair, whether that, just for interest sake, you know, to know if that still exists and if it works with the Youth Commission, or is it also part of the merging and remodeling processes that that come. But also, Chair, I think I need to express this. For me, it's a concern, this issue of the budget, you know, for the commission. It's really just an administration budget. It's, you know, I'm not too sure. Maybe it's us with them when we do the budget that we need to be looking at this thing, because it's simply budgeting for the youth month only. Yeah. And I mean, really, that's why young people out there have this outcry about ineffectiveness of the Youth Commission to make interventions. So, and then in relation to I have another question that relates to whether the Youth Commission, should they mention, in terms of the interdepartmental, they said now there's an increase. Cooperation and working together with the various departments, with people starting to participate. But also, for me, I'm looking at the role of the Youth Commission in relation to the important days, not just the June 16th or the Youth Month as such. Then that now, Chair, unless you organize a concert, for the Human Rights Day, so that's all that young people are said to be attracted on to participate in the Freedom Day. They talked about the Democracy Week, and I hope that takes care of such days, and also the Heritage Day, which also is an important day, I think, for me, and it will be more important for the young people, I think. Finally, Chair,
hello, Chairman.
Yeah, I also think it's a matter of huge concern with 19% of, in fact, 81% of the budget goes to really running the office, goes that without the youth month. I just wondered, I mean, it's pleasing to hear that there is a cutting down on non-essential items, but if the majority of the expenses goes to keeping the office and the personnel in the office alive and working, I just think that is a matter for extreme concern. And it is just a wonder that the youth out there are becoming disenchanted. Another question is around the issue of bad debt. I just wondered what the current situation is as far as bad debt is concerned, because it increased quite substantially from 2005-06 to 2006-07. And I'd just like to know whether those systems are being put in place. And all the control systems within the NYC now have been tightened up to an extent where there is going to be better management of the programs themselves, so that the NYC can and ourselves can hold our heads up and say, yes, it really is a well-functioning institute and it is making a difference to people out there. And it's quite difficult to answer a question like that when you are here to defend what you do and to defend what you are doing. But in terms of shared financial management, it doesn't look like a particularly healthy situation unless there has been a real turnaround in the last 12 months. I would just like to know, as far as the qualified audit is concerned, when is your next report due for the Auditor General? I think it should be by the end of May, am I correct?
what I find lacking from what the members have said. I would like the NYC to portray its highlights, to say these are our successes, this is what we have achieved, and then maybe it can counterbalance the other things that we are worried about. Thank you.
In the interest of time, I'll not reserve my question. And please shoot straight.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will start by answering the finance question. I want to submit humbly an apology. I have just done a proper calculation on our personnel expenditure. It's incorrect. Captured on the presentation, it shouldn't be 70%, it should be 58% of the budget, which is in line with the expenses of last year, which show that there's not been new procurement of new staff members. And the main reason for that is basically, the main reason for that is salary increase. And the reason is, in terms of the labor relations, we cannot just fire people now due to the pending merger. And I think one of the honorable members have really captured that the budget that we have received is an administrative budget. Given what we have submitted, first, when you look at the budget, you have to look at the budget through the eyes of the strategic plan, which we have presented. And that strategic plan has been costed at 33 million rand. That is what the National Treasury asked of us. We did that. We costed the strategic plan at 33 million rand. And what we got was 24.3 million rand, which is a shortfall of 9 million rand. Therefore, we had to reduce the priorities and then zoom in on only the priorities of priorities. So my apology for the incorrect percentage. It's not 70%, it's 58%. And then in terms of the audit committee, we have corrected that. The previous audit committee has been replaced with a new audit committee, and the current audit committee has been meeting regularly. They are up for a review of the audit committee somewhere around the end of May. We are supposed to review the audit committee, their effectiveness, and they are fulfilling that role, as the honourable member has highlighted. In terms of bad debt and control systems, we did improve. In terms of control systems, the audit committee is one. The internal audit committee, the internal audit function we have. We have the audit committee now. We have what we call a procurement committee, whereby we look at the availability of budget to against the request. And if there's not budget available for the request, then a program manager cannot get that fund. What we have done is to request the presidency written approval that we can shift budgets where there is a need. For example, if we are not going to fill a position, if we can use that money to shift it to a priority need, for example, in terms of programs. Some of these programs we still have to finish off before they can be migrated to departments to be implemented. The internal control systems is also part of the current strategic plan to continuously improve on that. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I think there were also a couple of questions on the programmatic aspects of the commission. And that's it to say to members. I think the latter comment that was made by Honorable Mutalosi I think because the request was said we must come and speak on the strategic plan for this financial year, that's why we were talking about the plan for this year, what is it that we have prioritized, and hopefully when we come to present the annual report, as the Honorable Chairman was referring to, we will be able to really say what is it that we have done in terms, because that annual report will give the performance of the Commission in terms of the last financial year, which also will indicate, even in terms of rents and cents, where is it that we have improved, where is it that we have done weaknesses. And I think maybe I would request that we are allowed to do that at that time, because I wouldn't want to be subjected now and start to speak on the on what we have achieved. And hopefully that document, which is already audited, will be able to give that particular a picture. But maybe to just go first to the question of the matter. Honorable members would remember in the last meeting, if it was not late last year, when we were engaging on the issue of the merger of the Youth Commission and the Mfubo Youth Fund, we did indicate, I think, when we started the Youth Commission and we look at what are the implications of the merger, both in terms of legislation and other matters, which both would obviously need to be considered as we process the matter of the merger. Now, when we talk about the research that we are talking about, it is not about researching whether we need the merger or not, but it is about ensuring that whatever the process becomes in terms of how you model institutions of youth development in South Africa, you would be able to respond to the different mandates, because members would remember that the National Youth Commission was established with a different mandate from Mfubo Youth Fund, which was more an implementing entity, utilizing also the other government departments. So what would therefore be the kind of mandate and the functions of the National Youth Development Agency as it is espoused, so that you're able, therefore, to make concrete pronouncements of what kind of an animal would this agency be. So that particular research is trying to respond to those particular questions, not to research about whether what kind of modeling are we going to be having. But the second point, I would want also to indicate that as the Youth Commission, amongst others, the government has established a government task team that is responsible to look at what is going to be the process of the merger of Mfubo Youth Fund and the National Youth Commission, which is still going to present, I think, by October to Cabinet some of the recommendations that they've made. So those are the kind of timelines that we're looking at. And obviously, from where we're sitting as the executive of the Youth Commission, we felt that since last year, we had the process of the restructuring, where we thought we wanted to strengthen, in particular, our support in the core functions of the Youth Commission, that is policy work, research, monitoring, and evaluation. We felt, because that has financial implications, that we need to put that process on hold, because we can't start to build and enlarge the institution whilst there is a looming a matter of the institution. So based on that, I think that was the position that was taken by the executive. And obviously when that matter has been resolved at a cabinet level, obviously then we'd know what becomes the status of the National Youth Commission, and obviously Parliament would also have a clear role in as far as that is concerned. On the matter that also was raised by Honorable Silo on the National Youth Service, I think it would really be a challenge, as I think he has indicated, where the National Youth Service becomes just a paper program. The implementation, I think members also know that the National Youth Service Unit is responsible for the implementation of the National Youth Service program. And one of the things that we did, which I think the member is referring to, is part of profiling the program, was to ensure that we've got a massive campaign of ensuring that this program is known and young people volunteer as people would want to participate in the program. Now, the challenge when you have the numbers of those young people on the database is to actually get the program that has got budget from the department. And that has been one of the key challenges of the National Youth Service Program. And I think in some areas we can even provide reports where even in the last year's target that President spoke about of the 30,000 young people who must be in the National Youth Service Program, I mean, getting young people to register, it was something that was very easy because young people do want to participate in the National Service Program. But the challenge was when you have those young people now, because you need to ensure that you comply with all the different requirements of what the National Service Program is. So if you're going to take young people from a particular community and say, this is the NYS that you're going to be doing, you must qualify all the other aspects, that is the skills, that is the training element must be there, the service element, stipends, which has been one of the huge problems because some of the departments do not want to give out money for stipends in as far as the National Youth Service programs are concerned. So that has been one of the biggest challenges of the National Youth Service. And I must say, even this year, one of the things that we were also faced with recently is that, of course, the Global Youth Service Day, which is celebrated internationally to support service, in particular amongst young people. There were programs that were committed by the National Youth Service Unit across the different provinces with a budget of about, I think, almost 4 million. And unfortunately, that entire project had to be canned because there is no money. So these are some of the things that I think correctly, as you are raising, when it comes to the implementation of this program, becomes a challenge because there is no clear dedicated funding for the National Youth Service. And this is one of the things that we've been raising, even at an IMC level, that you can't have a program of this magnitude just being a program that relies on the budget of government departments. There should be money that comes straight from the national fiscal to be able to support the National Youth Service Program. So it's one of the challenges that I must admit we are sitting with, even ourselves, with some of the young people that have registered in our own provincial youth commission. They are still sitting waiting on programs so that they can be engaged. And it's very difficult to just say to them, get engaged into a program where there are no commitments from the various departments in terms of the programs themselves. Honorable Lebenya has left, but I think on the matter of the Youth Parliament, again, this matter, I think during the strike 10 of the JNC, we did report about this matter, that, and we have written a number of letters to the Speaker's office. Firstly, about the fact that we participated in the Youth Parliament last year, and one of the outcries of young people, even in that particular parliament, was the fact that it wasn't a report of the previous parliament of 2006. And it was therefore resolved that that matter is going to be attended to. And unfortunately, we have seen a repeat of the same thing, because as a commission, which was given a responsibility to ensure that there is a report, we kept on making follow-up through the office of the Speaker about the report of the Youth Parliament. It was only this year, I think recently, about a month ago, when we got to be told that yes, there is a report, but that report is still to be presented into the House for it to be even made available to the people that participated. So these are some of the challenges that we even indicated to them that we are not prepared to participate this year in the Youth Parliament in those matters, because then we are set up to fail as a Youth Commission to be seen leading a Youth Parliament where we do not know, because our interest was to ensure that by last year already there is a report of the Youth Parliament and we are able to assist that committee to ensure that the resolutions of that committee of the Youth Parliament are realized. So we have developed a proposal which we said, based on that report being received, we will table to the people responsible, which in our view should be a youth parliament that doesn't just become a PR exercise when June month there is a youth parliament. It should be an engagement platform which also speaks to provincial governance and even at a local level. So we are still stuck at the level of the youth parliament at this point. And I think that is one thing that also we needed, I think, assistance from this particular committee. We have been engaging with some of the members, like Honorable Mukongi, who was sitting as part of the committee of the Youth Parliament last year, to say this is the situation, this is the frustration that we were having, because youth organizations and some participants, they are calling the Youth Commission office wanting the report. They are telling them that even ourselves, we do not have the report. So we can't actually, we can't say what has happened in terms of the resolutions that they have agreed upon. I think some of the other questions, without wasting time, I'll just run through them. Honorable Louis, on the issue of the youth, I think our focus or the definition of youth in terms of the National Youth Development Policy Framework and even in the current proposed policy is in 14 to 35. So that is the area where we are focusing on when we talk about youth. The harmonization of AIDS and partnership with the ORC. Indeed, we have started engagements with the ORC to understand that this year we have, on the International Children's Day, we're having a partnership program that's going to take place in Mpumalanga. One of the things that we've said is that we need to focus in terms of trying to align our work is, that is focusing on youth development and children's development. Because for any young person, before they become young, they're children. So if there is no working relationship between the two institutions, there is no way that we can be able to make a variable policy recommendations without understanding that way. And so in as far as that is concerned, we've started to say, one of the things that was proposed, I think, in a meeting 2 weeks ago at ORC, is that we need to really have a workshop, because one of the things is this harmonization of age, because we are sharing constituencies. Because some pieces of legislation define children up to 18, while at the same time we've got the definition of youth from 14 to 35. So we are sharing constituencies, and we need to have a discussion on how can we find, you know, a balance, or we can jointly make a proposal around the harmonization of age. Because when it comes to implementation of programs, it creates problems for the different institutions that are responsible for these different constituencies. So basically, I think that is what they were referring to, and I think both institutions are very excited to be working together in ensuring that at least our work, you know, is aligned as the two institutions. The last one, also from Honorable Louis, on the stakeholder. Yes, indeed, South African Youth Council is a civil society youth umbrella body that was established in 1997. But I think one of the challenges of that institution, like most of NGO coalition, like Sangokos and others, have been faced with serious challenges of leadership, issues of funding to sustain the organization. To an extent that even ourselves as the Youth Commission, we've tried to engage with them, but broadly speaking, we are meeting with other youth organizations that are aware, and we're told that they are going to their triennial General Assembly sometime this year so that they can revive South African Youth Council as that coordinating platform of civil society voice. Yes, we are participating in the Presidential Youth Working Group. The last working group was where we presented the draft National Youth Policy, which was last year, I think, somewhere in September. Last year in August. And the next one that is upcoming now is going to take place now in June, to look at what has happened. At this point, in terms of the policy work, from our side, I think as the National Youth Commission, we feel that we have done what is required of us. The policy was consulted, we've collated the work, we've developed a policy sitting now with the minister so that it gets into to be processed through the government system and gets to be adopted. The main thing that we are focusing on is to ensure that that policy doesn't just become a policy on its own. There is implementation plan, there is monitoring, which are the priorities. And obviously, as a commissioner has raised, that our challenge of the budget is going to really hamstring that particular work, and we're hoping that when we go to the National Treasury again, you know, to request for funding, in the main is to really conclude this work, because we wouldn't want, even if the Youth Commission is closed, it's closed without that implementation plan and an MNE tool to measure youth development has been concluded and adopted by the country, so that at least we do have those frameworks going forward, even with the new institution that will be established. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think I've tried quickly to cover some of the questions that have been asked.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to put the salary expenses in a proper context. If you look at what we spent on personnel expenses 2006-2007, it was at 56% of the budget. 2007-2008, it was at 57% of the budget. And 2008-2009 is estimated at 58.9% of the budget. And that's due to the double-digit salary or annual increase. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Last follow-up, please.
Just to say that it would be very useful, it would be very useful for the Youth Commission
performance of government generally, because what's the point of us, of you, coming later to this committee, tell us 6 months ago this should have happened or ought to have happened, it didn't happen. I think this should be seen as an ongoing thing. And the same applies, of course, to the report of the youth parliament. I do not think that you should find it difficult to get that report from the office of the speaker. We are here as a committee, and because you are naturally interested in that, apprise us of those developments and let us act immediately, because we don't want any flimsy excuses raised why certain things do not happen, because we are empowered as an organ here in Parliament, both in terms of the rules of Parliament and the Constitution, to call anybody, including whoever. So I'm saying that this is one thing that we need to think about. I know you're talking measures in the not so distant future, but in the meantime, let's get that going.
I'm sure the NYC make use of that opportunity. Honourable Member, do you want to say something? Honourable Member, thanks very much for attending. I know that you have to catch flights, other flights are connecting. NYC, thanks very much, but do expect to spend a full day when you do your annual report. We'll really go through it. We'll skin it. Right through the bone. And please, be ready for that. And may I add that the any presentation for honorable demand, if you could get it in time. Thanks very much. There is light that is said.